Let's get to our guest. Ashish Chanda is with us, founder and CEO of Crystal, on the line from Singapore. Ashish, thanks for being with us. A lot of the focus here, away from what we're going to get in less than an hour now when it comes to the Chinese data, is what the Fed may do next week. We've seen a spike in U.S. Treasury yields across the curve, particularly at the short end. I think it's a fair statement that the move next week is going to be somewhat aggressive. 75 basis points seems to be the consensus. Do you think we are kind of at risk right now of seeing a lot more dollar strength, or in terms of the dollar story, have we kind of reached a peak?
So yeah, you're right. The 75 basis points is pretty much baked in. It remains to be seen what happens in the other two meetings, because now most of the street is expecting 4% to possibly happen by end of this year. So dollar strength is definitely stretched, but there could be more legs to it. In fact, we were thinking that it would be in its last leg and there could be a correction if Fed does take a reversal. But the latest data that's coming out shows that dollar strength is likely to continue at least for a couple of months.
Can the Fed actually achieve that soft landing? Will we avoid a recession?
Well, that's a million-dollar question. So what's happening is that anything above 4%, we believe, could cause a hard landing. So it's a touch-and-go situation. I think some sectors in the U.S. are probably already in a recession, but a soft landing is still the likely case if Fed puts the brakes on hikes towards the end of this year. So let's say if you have a 75, 15, 25, that's a positive signal to the market that the Fed is not likely to be so aggressive next year, but remains on the data to come out.
So one of the things that we've also been looking at is what's been happening with the Japanese yen as it relates to the dollar. The yen stronger today by quite a bit. We're at 142.90, so on the strong side of 143. Earlier in the week, the concern was the possibility of intervention from the Bank of Japan. Give me your sense now of what you're looking at in terms of yen vis-a-vis the greenback.
So dollar-yen definitely is one of the pairs which is used for funding or borrowing. Now, the positioning over there is pretty strong. So there is a risk that if the dollar long dollar trade reverses, then you could have a sharp pullback in that. So we've got to be a bit more cautious on yen versus, let's say, the other EM currencies, but just because of the positioning that's there.
So what about in terms of what we're seeing with the yuan and the PBOC's efforts there to really try and defend that, and I guess the importance here of that 7 to the dollar level?
So I think the speed of depreciation matters, but the psychological 7 level, it has been breached a couple of years back, 2019, I think, and that's not going to be a very big event anymore. But the speed of depreciation is definitely something that the central banks would like to keep an eye on. So we think that, yes, there will be more weakness of the yuan, and let's see how the data comes out. But it's also linked to the domestic demand in China being disrupted with the COVID lockdowns. So definitely there is more yuan depreciation on the cards, but we don't think it's going to be a very sharp move beyond 7, because the PBOC is likely to control it.
One of the stronger elements in the Chinese economy has been the export sector, as you well know, and I'm wondering whether or not this weakness will fortify that part of the Chinese economy.
So you've got to see it in the light of an international demand versus domestic demand. So today, the domestic demand signals are quite weak. International demand is coming from the weakness, or the weakness over there is coming from the weakness in growth in Europe as well as the U.S., so yes, exports have been pretty decent, but we'll have to see what the trend is going forward and how a potential recession in US or Europe pans out the demand for international or exports.
We were talking about South Korea's record low unemployment. This does give latitude for the Bank of Korea to raise rates again, similar to what we saw with Australia's jobs numbers yesterday. How are you kind of viewing the complications of central banks in Asia and, I guess, the opportunities in some of these economies?
I think the Asian central banks clearly have to fight inflation as well as look at, you know, how the currencies are hit with the long dollar. But having said that, with the employment data coming in pretty strong across a couple of countries, it shows that they do have the leeway to hike the rates by another few basis points. So let's say Korea going from 2.5 to, let's say, 3 over the next few months. But that's the balance that they have to strike in terms of the global demand reduction that's likely to come from Europe and US. and how do they make sure that their economies are well insulated from that. But having said that, so some leeway in having rate hikes is always good news for them, but they have to be doing it very cautiously.
You know, the energy story has been such a major thread when we talk about higher inflation and building pressures, whether it's in the U.S., Europe, or in the APAC region where you are. When you look at the crude oil market right now, and we see crude just kind of trading around 85 the barrel, that's WTI. I'm curious to get your take. Do you have a forecast right now? Are we maybe close to a top, at least in near-term oil, because of some of the risk to economic growth globally?
So we don't forecast a particular price, but we do mention overweight versus underweight. So we have been overweight commodities for quite some time early this year. But now as the fears of recession or the talk of recession is coming more than the inflation, you may see that the recession rhetoric takes over inflation rhetoric in the next quarter. And hence, oil, we are likely to be more underweight or neutral than overweight.
What sectors are you kind of seeing as attractive when we look at all the headwinds that we've been facing with the inflationary pressures and I guess also the regulatory concerns too? I mean, is it time to look at the likes of tech or property in China?
So we're still, I would say, more value-focused. Yes, China is a value market, and we see what happens in second half of October if there is any stimulus coming from there. It has been beaten down a lot in terms of the pricing. But clearly on the tech, we in the US, let's say, we are underweight. Short-term bonds, we think, is the right place to park your money. And looking at, you know, more long-short plays, market-neutral strategies, at least for the next 3 to 4 months. Not yet bullish on any property sector in China yet, but overall looking to have more overweight on China. Looking by hoping that there is some stimulus coming after the October meetings.
Ashish, is there a trade right now that you would avoid at all costs? Let's say something of a kind of a herd mentality position that you think is just wrong-headed right now?
I wouldn't say it's wrong, but the long dollar trade could get into a territory which is ready for a sharp pullback. So while I'm still saying that, yes, that has more legs to go, but we now need to be very, very cautious on how far it can go, especially versus the yen and some other currencies.
Let's talk about India. I mean, this is something that you've mentioned for some time in terms of attractiveness, and it's something that we hear a lot on the program. But is it too late for people to be looking at India, or are there still some good upside here?
So within the growth segment, we are quite bullish on India. We think that that's an economy that's likely to grow a lot next year. Yes, there is a headwind from the oil prices and the currency weakness, but the cost of hedging the currency is pretty low now given the rate differentials. So we're quite optimistic within the growth segment that despite the valuations over there, it's a market that's likely to grow and deliver a very high growth. So quite optimistic on countries like India and maybe even a few places like Thailand, Vietnam.
All right, Ashish, thank you. Ashish Chanda, founder and CEO at Crystal, joining us from Singapore here.